Just a couple of things. Somebody asked me at the break. I was telling the story about Linda saying, "Let's don't go on our vacation," and I apparently didn't finish it. We did stay in Nashville, and we did pick up those extra days, and it probably saved me. And that's just a classic example of her doing something neat. A couple of other little pieces I keep finding in my notes. I invite God to ride in the car with me. I become a better driver. And also, if you put your blinker on near me in traffic, I'll let you in. That's a big deal for me. I'm a type A. And I'm letting you in. And I think it's important. And one other piece. I find you ladies all very attractive. And it's important for me and for my own spiritual program that I not get hung up on that. And this is a gift from a fellow that I sponsor, and it's a prayer. And it's, "God, help me find in you whatever it is I'm looking for in her." And it really turns that right off. Share that in case somebody can use it.
I would like to kind of make some announcements. Several of you have asked about this pamphlet of detachment, how to let the adults in your life be adults. And they are available usually at all Al-Anon meetings. Pamphlets are usually free. And the pamphlets and booklets are usually like at cost. We've got some great ones. This is called Sexual Intimacy. It's out of print now, I guess because there's no pictures in it. I don't know why. But I'm going to put it, and this is like my last copy, so I'm not going to, you know, I'd like to have it back. But I've got some little affirmations up here. Y'all pick up one or two. I'm going to leave the Al-Anon literature. I don't know if they have an Al-Anon literature table set up or not. Here's another one, is We Understood, which is about spiritual comments. It's very strong. And so I just wanted to tell you about a little bit about our literature. I would like to thank whoever put this energy drink up here. Thank you so much. I probably will be able to just speed right through this, okay? And because we believe in the minority voice, everybody, group conscience, everybody should be heard, we got this little note, and it says, "I believe your audience would appreciate it if you stand up while speaking. It shows respect as well as imparting a higher level of energy. This, I guess she means this, comes off as judges in a courtroom." And I'd like to say thank you for your comment. But I've also learned in Al-Anon to take care of myself. And physically, to do this all day, it just really does best for me to sit down. And Scott's been sick, so that's why. Not to show any disrespect, I wear a dress because I honor Al-Anon. I try to act like an Al-Anon member all the time. I have great love for my program.
And I came in the shirt and tie and the vest out of respect, too. I just started undressing because it just got hot up here. And somebody asked me, and if we don't have music, I'm not going to address any further. I appreciate your question. And I think that handles all the ones that we needed to share with you guys.
Did I already say about I got some little affirmations and put out?
Yeah.
Scott gives away all his handouts. I didn't want to be outdone. So I got borrowed scissors because they don't let you take them on the airplane these days. And cut those out. So grab a handful and have fun. Pass them on.
A friend of ours gave us a definition for manipulation I really like. He said manipulation is trying to get somebody to do something without asking them. Yeah, it's a very unhealthy form of communication, is to name the problem and jump back hoping somebody else will fix it. And learning to ask for what I want, pretty important thing. I have a sign on my desk. It's right here. It says, "Ask Linda." And it's to remind me that if I wonder what she thinks about something I'm about to say or do, I must ask her, because I'm not a husband in training. She's not working my case. And if I don't ask, the chances are very small that she's going to tell me. And that is such a gift, that she treats me just like an adult. And I'll tell you, you want to hear about a great Al-Anon program? Listen to this. She never helps me find a parking place unless I ask her to. Mm-hmm. That hit home here and there, didn't it? Uh-huh. And also, just sort of as a point of honor, for those of you who... were wondering why the man has to hold the remote. It's not to find out what's on TV. It's to find out what else is on TV.
I hope
that helps.
And I appreciate that talent, because I never would have seen Ninja Warrior if you hadn't found that. Now we get to watch Ninja Warrior.
That's it on the energy drink, darling.
Scott was talking about in traffic, and that's another time that we communicate with others in traffic. Maybe y'all have waved at other people in traffic and not used to all of the hands and all that, okay? Well, I have an Al-Anon friend that she says her role in life now is to stomp out global whining. And so she travels in a high traffic going to work and everything. And so she's come up with a great scheme to give back. She keeps a red clown nose on the front seat of her car. And when traffic's getting tense and everything, she just picks it up and puts it on. And people start doing exactly what y'all are doing, you know? I mean, it's those little things that just make life so much fun. And why shouldn't we have fun while we're on this planet together? Now, there are times that we need to communicate, and this can be between you and your sponsor, you and a family member. It happens to be between Scott and I. What happened is we realized, well, what happened was, sometimes I would go to Scott's AA meeting, his open AA meeting. In fact, that's the way we met. So, you know, but now you know what it's like to go to it. You go to the meeting before the meeting, you go to the meeting, then you stay for the meeting after the meeting, and then sometimes you go to lunch. And now it's about one or two on a Saturday or Sunday, and then maybe they want to go to a movie and then go to another meeting, and then pretty soon you're like with them all day. And since I want to be a proper Al-Anon, Scott says, hey, do you want to go to lunch with them? I don't want to say, well, no, I'd rather go home and do something else. You know, that would be very embarrassing. It would show me not as a very good Al-Anon. So what we had to do, if when somebody asks us something in a group, we give each other a signal. Like, yes, I'd like to do that. No, I would not like to do that. Or I really don't have an opinion on that. Remember Carol Burnett used to pull her ear at the end of her show to say hello to her grandmother? Those are the kind of signals I'm talking about that we've worked out ahead of time. Like if we're over visiting my dad and I'm probably never ready to go and Scott gets ready to go, so he can give me a signal, and I can say, I didn't realize it's getting so late. We better get out of here. So while I am talking about this, Scott has done all of our signals, and you're not even aware of them, okay? We just have, it's again, that first step, that unity, that we have a way of communicating, not excluding anybody, but letting each other know. Even if when we're trying to decide going to a movie, you know, we go, we'll name a movie, and I say on a scale of 1 to 10, do you really want to go? And you go, no, 6 or something. And, well, I'm about a 4. Well, maybe we won't go. Or he's a 9. Yeah, I'd really like to get out today, get away from the office, whatever. We have a set date night, date day, starting at Wednesday at 3:30. And after 3:30, most of my messages from my sponsees, I know it's date day, but I just wanted to tell you, blah, blah, blah. But we really don't interrupt that time, okay? We save it.
Yeah, we take emergencies only.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes we include a double date with another couple in recovery. We're not exclusive. It's just to put on the calendar. If we don't put it on our calendar, it doesn't happen. You know, it doesn't happen.
Priority is not what I say, it's what I do. And we check calendars frequently. I do it with the guys I sponsor. They come to my home on third Tuesday. It's appropriate to come as early as 4:30. We start some informal stuff around 6:30. We eat around 6. And then from 7 to 9, we do a big book study. Sometimes we cover as much as a page and a half or 2 pages. These guys know the book. We look words up. We play. We have a pretty good time. I've had to move it. This past month, it was moved to the fourth Tuesday. Next month, it's to the fourth Tuesday. So I have to give them lead time on that. So people who have a right to know what my calendar looks like find out ahead of time. They deserve that. That's part of respect. Somebody go on.
You know, I think a refrigerator is a great way to communicate. You know, if I hear from sponsees, say, well, I have to remind my son all the time to carry out the trash. I said, well, why don't you just put a note on the refrigerator? Why should you have to keep doing that over and over and over? You know, we say if you have to tell somebody more than twice, it's nagging. It really is. And there was another couple that when they wanted to have a bedroom date, they'd put a that morning, they'd put a little magnet, special magnet, like a red light or green light on the refrigerator. And that's how they kind of knew, and they could kind of look forward to it all day long because they spotted the magnet on the refrigerator. And she said one day, her husband said, you haven't put that magnet up there. I've been the only one putting it up there for a long time. But they were communicating about it. They were talking about it. I guess what Scott has given me the gift that there's really no closed subjects. You know, every now and then I have kind of a slip, and I'll start out by saying, what I'm about to say may make you mad. And that's only come up more recently. And I realize I need to take that out. I'm not responsible for his reaction. I've got to mean what I say what I mean, not in a mean way. And that's the way it is with everybody, from the clerk at the grocery store or whatever, you know. I feel. But I didn't know my feelings until I worked the steps, and I didn't know how to communicate with you until I worked the traditions with my sponsor. And, you know, the concepts, well, you know, I didn't know I could fall asleep while reading. But the concepts are important, too. They really are. And we have four warranties. Do you have any warranties? Mm-hmm. We have four warranties.
Yeah, they sleep too?
No, they're kind of fun.
Oh, good. Hey, I want to talk a little bit. We talked in the last session about anonymous giving, and it's just a beautiful thing. I want to talk about what that does not mean, and then I want to talk about what it does. I knew a couple, and in their courting period, he would dress up in a tuxedo and she'd put on the ball gown. They went to ballet, and they did that. Actually, didn't live too far from here, and they went to the ballet a lot. And they finally got married, and they're literally walking out of the church, walking down the aisle. And he says to her, "I'm so glad we're finally married." And she says, "Well, I am too. Why are you so glad?" He said, "So I'll never have to go to another blankety blank blank ballet." That is not anonymous giving. That is living a lie. That is a very different thing. It's a very different thing when I see a chick flick coming up that I think that she'll enjoy, that I'll probably be okay with. When I say, "Hey, let's go to the chick flick." It only counts if there's not a price. That there can't be a price on, all right, I took you to the chick flick, so I'm going fishing with the guys on Friday. No, no, no. That's not what that's about. And I got this some time ago. There's a special thing that happens when I do something good for somebody else and don't get caught. And at the risk of sounding poetic, this is just the best I can do describing it. It's like there's a piece of sunshine about the size of a ping pong ball that just kind of shows up in my chest. It's on the inside near my heart. And I can think about what I've done any time, and it'll glow and send light through my whole body. And I see some people nodding who know what I'm talking about. And I had an opportunity years ago to do something like that. And I did it, and I didn't tell a soul. And I could think about that any time of the day or night, in any situation. It would just light me up. So I never told for about 6 months. And that's the best I can do. And when I told, it got out. And so I'm going to tell you the rest of it, because there was a second lesson on this that was so important to me. And I'm a commissioned salesman, and I had one of those magic days where I walk into my 8 o'clock appointment in the morning. I don't even set my case down. The receptionist says, "He's ready for you." I walk in. The purchasing agent says, "I don't have time to talk today. Here's your order." And that happens all morning at noon. I'm finished. Nowhere to go. Nothing to do. Fishing gear in the back. State park. I'm fishing. There's a little family having a picnic. They got a 7-year-old boy. Apparently, he and I are going to fish together today. Looks like I'm going to cast, and he's going to do everything else. And that's the way it looks from here. And I'm good with it. And we caught some, and it was good. And I met them and talked a little bit. And he had 3 siblings, and none of them were fishermen either. And I was a fisherman at 5. I was just born with it. And I was at a place in my life where I had a lot of spare time. I got to know the family. I told them the truth about me. I took him on some short trips to really be sure, and he was a fisherman. And the Buffalo River in Tennessee is about an hour west of Nashville, and I say I like to hope that there are places in heaven almost as beautiful as the Buffalo River. I hope so. And that little guy and I, he was eight by then, we put a canoe in the Buffalo River one day, and we floated 5 miles. We didn't see another boat all day. Caught over 100 fish that day. Yeah, I said it was a magic day. And kid caught a 4-pound smallmouth bass. Mm-hmm. He got my fish, is what happened. Anyway, about a mile from the takeout, all of a sudden the sky blackens and I hear the thunder, and we are just going to get it. And there's nowhere to get out of this river. And I did, the canoeists call it eddy out. There's a little backwater, and I kind of parallel parked up under some trees. And I'm about to give God a little piece of mind. Did you happen to notice St. Scott, and he caught my fish? I'm doing this prayer, you see. And this beautiful little guy looks over his shoulder at me, and he says, "Is it okay to fish here?" And he caught a fish on that cast. And what a lesson that was for me. Because, you see, I prayed the third step prayer and I meant it. I prayed the seventh step prayer and I meant it. It makes the rest of my life none of my business. And I believe when the skies blacken in my life and I hear the thunder and know I'm going to get it, I think that's the question I'm supposed to take to my Father. Is it okay to fish here? See, that's the question. We're talking about communication with God, ourselves, and others. Mm-hmm. There it is, all in one place. Is it okay to fish here? Because, you see, that's my assignment. I understand that. And it may change. My mentor said it would. It has a couple of times. It's okay to fish here. That's what I'm here for. That's why I thank you who brought the new people. Love them. Love them. Got to have them. Got to have them. Can't do it without them.
I went blank.
I got one more little piece.
Oh, excuse me. Okay.
I've got a couple of standing assignments from my sponsor, and one of them is to spread the joy. It's my assignment. So I thank people. I try to be bright and cheery. That's what I do. And what I've discovered is if I'm sloshing it all over you, there's no way to keep it from splattering onto me.
Okay, I'm amazed since telephones came out is how many people talk on the phone. Like everybody in their cars talk on the phone. It looks like we're communicating pretty well, and yet it seems like we don't communicate. I believe that, and Scott knows this from the get-go, I said, I don't believe in sharing a meal together and not talking. So, you know, you have to kind of prompt them sometime, like, tell me another story from your childhood. Or I have a girlfriend that she keeps an old dictionary on her table, and when she and her husband and their three children sit down, if there's no conversation, then somebody has to open it up and find a word, and they talk about it, okay? We can't communicate if we don't try it, if we don't experiment in it. And sometimes I don't even know what I believe until I start telling you about it. I've held it in, and I don't even know what I believe about something until I start talking to you about it. I need to hear it that way from myself. So with keeping that in mind, I guess Scott and I had been married about 2 years.
I don't know where you're going.
With the one couple retreat.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Actually, Scott came out of a 26-year-old marriage. I was married 16 years and then 8 years, and then we've been married 13 years.
And we're going to have a 50th wedding anniversary when they all add up.
Yeah. Just of how many years we've been married. It's actually going to be about 125.
That's just an excuse for a party. You're into that, aren't you?
There you go. So he'd been going to, the men's retreat. We'd gone to conferences. I'd gone to some women's retreat. And I came up with the idea that I really didn't know him. I didn't have his history. You know, we've only been married 13 years. And so I wanted to get to know him. And I said, what about if we do a one couple retreat? And he was agreeable to that idea. It was not a vacation. We got together and planned it just like the people got together and planned this conference, just like if you've ever been on a committee for a state assembly or a conference of any kind, we'd have meetings and we'd talk about it. We would talk about topics that we wanted to cover. We had topics like money. We had topics like all of our family members. I didn't really know how Scott felt about being around my dad, who's still an active drinker. You know, Scott says whoever came up with the term blended family obviously wasn't in one. So that gave us a chance to talk about our four children. You know, we had topics about, we had all kinds of topics. I have the wrong piece of paper
for
that.
Yeah, I'm taking one out.
Okay. So we would have this assignment, and our plan was to go up to this this cabin, thank you, this cabin that had was self-contained. We planned simple meals, you know, and then only one person, our youngest daughter, had the emergency number, and that was emergency like blood on the floor type emergency. We completely disconnected from the world, not as a vacation, but at we went up there on like Thursday night. So Friday morning when we got up at 9 o'clock, just like this conference started at 9 o'clock with our workshop, we started with the first workshop that was maybe on fears, food, sex, death of family members, retirement, spending. I mean, we had all this, and we were going to talk about money for an hour and then take a break. And what happened is I got to know Scott, and I got to know myself, and he got to know me. And I think he got to know the kind of man that he was, and since then we're very blessed to have you know, kind of a retreat house. I've taken women out there and spent the night. Just said we're just going to talk and be contained into this environment. Let's talk about this. Let's talk about this, and all kinds of understandings come out of it. A lot of what you heard today came out of that one couple's retreat. Now, do you have some of these to hand out or not?
Yeah, I've got these. I don't have the understandings.
He doesn't have the understandings. Okay.
That doesn't matter. I come up with our own understandings.
Yeah, you come up with your own understandings that come out of that. A couple of years later, we tried it again, and we found out we didn't have so much to talk about, you know. But just think about if you had 6 hours or so with your sponsor where you weren't doing a fifth step, just think what kind of exchange that would be. I get my sponsees together, and we spend the night at the River House. And we cook meals together. We talk about things. We hang around the campfire together. I mean, we communicate. Or there's silence, and we communicate in companion silence. But you have to make these things happen. You have to plan them. And I congratulate you for participating in your own recovery by being here today. I mean, there's a beach out there. Thank you so much.
it took us about 6 months to plan this. We would take like every other Tuesday night from like 7 to 9, because we were making this up, and we came up with the topics that we wanted to talk about, and said, I've got a handout on this. And then we graded them two ways. One was how rough could this topic be, like talking about all the individual family members could get pretty tough. Talking about toys are things like boats and airplanes, probably pretty easy. So we weighed them so we didn't put two tough ones back to back. We also tried to figure how long will that one take. Is that a 1 hour session or 2 hour session? And we planned a schedule based on that. We planned the menus. We grocery shopped on the way in. We assigned chair people, just the two of us there, and chairperson, same responsibilities at my home group. Start and stop on time, keep us on point, and also to make notes, because we've already got a date, I think about 90 days out from that, to review, to see if we made the changes that we said we were going to make. And that's where we came up with this shared vision that she's talking about. I believe this can be done with anybody, probably on a smaller scale if it isn't the heavy committed relationship. It can be done with anybody, to come up with a vision of what does this thing look like. And we've done three of them now. The second one, and I'll tell you something, one of the things we talked about was our own deaths. Mm-hmm. I talked about what it would be like for me to be notified that she just died. And it touched the depth of my soul that's never been touched before or since, and I just sobbed, and she held me while I cried. Where do you go to replace that? It was an amazing experience, and I drove away from there never having felt that close to a human being in my whole life.
You know, I think this grieving is a big part of our recovery because the disease robs us. We've talked about that. And when you experience losses, you experience grief. And I heard on this guy on the radio the other day, he was a veterinarian. And I love our animals. I think our animals are part of our enjoyment of our life. And he said, there's the loving owner syndrome. And he says that the day you get a pet, a cat, a dog, whatever, he says you begin grieving because you know that you're probably going to outlive that pet. And once that was acknowledged to me, once I had heard that truth, I could accept it. You know, that this is, and it's all about taking the fear away by finding out what your truth is and then being able to speak it. And that's what we're about today, I think.
When we did the second one about 5 years later, and my recollection is we did that one within about a year of when we were married. I don't know. And then about 5 years later, we planned another one and did it at a state park that had self-contained, really nice places. And within an hour and a half or 2 hours, we were finished. I mean, we buffed off some things and we were done. That one turned into a vacation. And then 5 years after that, I lost my job. And I had had a really good job that we thought we were going to ride into retirement. And, I mean, it just disappeared one day through no fault of my own. And we sequestered for a weekend and talked about finances and made a whole lot of changes. We changed that first number. I told you we had a spending limit. We divided that by five. I mean, we made a lot of commitment changes, and we're still living them.
Mm-hmm.
And I've started on a new kind of career thing that I'm having a lot of fun with, and it's not paying me anything yet, but we're good with that. We're okay where we are because it's we. So I'm not okay where I am. We're okay where we are. That's what we're doing because we've come to agreement on this kind of stuff. And I say it's been an amazing thing for us. We don't have another one of these planned, but this is a second sheet, and it talks about what we did. We hope if you're interested in this that you'll take one of these, and we hope you'll rewrite it. Go have your own experience. The another detail is when we told the youngest daughter was at that time like 20, and we told everybody we sponsored, all the family members, this is where we're going, this is what we're going to do. And Lindsay's got the phone number. And if you have a real emergency, tell her, she'll call us, allow us to define emergency for you. Emergency is when there's blood on the floor and you have dialed 911. If you don't have both of those in place, no phone calls.
I hope that for those that have not had too much exposure to Al-Anon that maybe perked your interest. I have a friend who said that, what does he say, that AA is his suicide prevention and his Al-Anon program is his homicide prevention. So I think there's some truth in that. And you know, we've got a lot of history together, AA and Al-Anon, and we need to keep it like the rails, you know, independent. And now Al-Anon has a pamphlet. It's pamphlet 45, and it's got some quotes in there from AA members who start going and working an Al-Anon program. Several years ago, I started sponsoring an Al-Anon woman. She called me and she said, I mean, an AA woman. She called me and said, will you be my Al-Anon sponsor? And I said, not if you don't go to Al-Anon meetings. Because if you don't go to Al-Anon meetings, you don't need an Al-Anon sponsor. She was 13 years sober. Our agreement was that whatever AA sponsor said came first. Because if she didn't stay sober, there wasn't any need for her to have Al-Anon, you know, bumping up against family members not sober. And I started her through the steps using the Alateen literature. And she's been going to Al-Anon for like 8 years now. So I just encourage you to check out a meeting, and I encourage you to go there as a member of Al-Anon, okay, and just say that. You know, I'm a newcomer, I'm in Al-Anon. And pamphlet 45 will kind of help with some of that. I'm kind of wrapping up my part. I've got some affirmations here that I cut up, that I was reading some of them. I welcome you to take those and pass them on. I have to tell you, thank you. Thank you for allowing me to come and hang out with you today. It's been incredible. Thank you for this chance to sit up here beside my husband and share. I've really had a great time. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I, I am gratified and astounded at the number of people that came for this today. And I would ask you, if you take one of these handouts, to please just take one. Feel free to make copies. We wrote this stuff. But please just take one, because I don't know if I got enough to go around. I'm keeping one back for me, and if we run out, I'll print some more. And I think I'm back on tomorrow morning at 9, so I'll try to have some if that's necessary. You want to go ahead and go into meditation?
Yeah,
we've been going for right at 30 minutes, honey.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we should take a break. We should go right in.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, we should end this part of it then. That's the end of the workshop. How's that? Are there any questions? And then we're... Thanks, Lee. He's going, wait a minute. Okay. But we're going to see. Well, we're going to ask him. Does anybody have any questions? I don't know if the tape's still running or not. It doesn't really matter. But as far as communicating with God, ourselves, and others, what anything has sparked a question? What we're going to do is we're going to do a guided imagery meditation. And you don't have to stay. Those can go. Anybody have any feedback? Thank you. And you know what? I love you. And you know what? You're awesome, too. If you spot it, you've got it. If you think we're awesome, it's because you're awesome. Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. So... we're going to do this guided imagery. You want to talk about meditation a little bit?
Yeah, go back to meditation for a couple of minutes.
Start wiggling around. Put stuff out of your laps.
Lee, you still getting this? Good. This is going to be a guided imagery. We're going to do a little breathing exercises and take you on a little trip. And if you haven't done this kind of thing before, I hope you'll try it. We've got a friend who meditates lying on his back on the floor with his feet up in the chair. Some like to sit on the floor with their back against the wall. I hope you'll experiment with that. There's one. All the way down. Oh, good. And if you're so inclined, I think you'll find this a very interesting experiment. How many people have done meditation of some kind? Yeah, that's what I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, for those who have not, these people don't appear to be afraid of it. So, it's probably not too bad a deal. Yeah, that's quite all right.
Mm-hmm. Great, thank you.
For me, meditation works better on an empty stomach. Typically, in the morning, we do the first 10 to 20 minutes in each other's arms, prayer and meditation. She makes coffee, I shower and shave, we meet on the sofa. I read 2 pages a day in the big book, and she reads some Al-Anon literature, and then we have some other things that we read, and then we sit and meditate together, something similar to this. And that's how we start our days most of the time. It works better for me on an empty stomach. You can't hurt yourself doing this. At any time, if you want to break meditation, all you got to do is open your eyes. It's all over. Stops it every time. It's important. This is really important. If you need to sneeze or cough, please sneeze or cough. That will be easier for us to deal with than blue people. We don't do well with blue people. It's a gentle process. For me, there are 3 states of consciousness. There's awake, asleep, and the one that lies between. Where if the phone hadn't rung, you'd have been asleep in the next 2 or 3 seconds. You know the one I'm talking about? In meditation, I can go there and stay. And it's just a really neat place. So my body goes to sleep. My mind remains alert, but pretty much inactive. And
how are we going to do this? Because you want to do the left meditation?
Yeah, well, let's go ahead and do yours and come out, and then we'll see who wants to stay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to go into this meditation. And you want to do some more lights down? That'd be great, up here. He can't find the light switch, okay.
Yeah, he can.
This is one that's... Thank you. This is one that's about a guided imagery about a request that I've never put this one on tape before, because it's going to feel like there's a place in there that's going to maybe feel a little scary. And I want you to just trust it, okay? Just stay with us and know that you're in a safe place. And if it seems uncomfortable, all you have to do is open your eyes. But there's going to come a time in there, in the meditation, I'm going to guide you like a little story. There's going to come a time in there that we're going to be quiet, and you're going to kind of do your own search in a very quiet way. And then after we've been quiet for a little while, we'll bring you out of the meditation. Although, in truth, you could come out of it any time you wanted. Okay? So, everybody cough. Wiggle around. Some more. Some more lights out.
I think you're going to have to move away from those.
I think you look like fried pies over there under the light. Okay. So, everybody wiggle around a little bit. There we go. Whoa. That's getting really dark. Okay. Okay. Stretch your arms up above your head. Stretch. Okay. And then not too much, but go to the left and to the right and kind of stretch it up and wiggle your fingers around. And then very gently come down and tap the top of your head like little raindrops. And then come down and then just rub your face a little bit. Then just kind of drop your hands down. And when you're ready, go ahead and close your eyes. That felt so good. Let's try it again. Stretch up, but don't hurt anything. Like you're signaling for a touchdown. Reach. Open your fist and close them. Very gently come down, embrace your face, come down and rub your face, and then let your arms just fall where they're comfortable. Kind of pick your feet up and turn your ankles in and around and around and around. I'm going to rotate them the other way, and then when you're ready, just drop them right down in front of you. Move up your legs and kind of squeeze the tops of your legs, your buttocks. Squeeze it and hold it in, then release it and let it go. Kind of put some energy in your back muscle and kind of grip it a little bit. Then release it. Pick your shoulders up and like you're going to touch your ears with it, and then kind of rotate them around. Rotate them, touch your ears, and then let them rotate back down. And now very gently roll your head one way, roll it around, roll it, your head on your neck. When you're ready, like change, go the other direction. Your eyes should be closed by now. You should be kind of settled in your chair. Bring your head back to the center, put it in a comfortable place. And I'm going to ask you to take a deep breath and hold it in. Deep breath in, hold it, and release it with a sound. Excellent, excellent. Now breathe in all the good, real deep, all of the good, all of the good. Hold it, release the toxic. This is our last breath that we're going to take together, and you'll be breathing on your own after this. So breathe in. Breathe in. Hold it. Release. Push it way out. Push it out. And now just breathe in and out at your leisure. Settle into your chair. And silently offer up a prayer. This is a time of safety. May everything that you experience be to honor your higher power and for your own good. Say your prayer however you want. And now you have a feeling of motion. You're moving. Your seat's vibrating just ever so slightly. And you're moving along and you realize that you're on a bus. A bus, a pretty good sized bus, and it's going on down the road. And you look around you and your neighbors and the seats beside you are people that you know. They're family members, people from your work, people that you see at meetings. And you kind of put your head out in the aisle and you look around and you realize that you know every single person on this bus. It's amazing. And they're chatting and talking and looking out the window and laughing. And everybody that you know, seems to be on this bus. And you think that's a bit unusual, but you're okay with it because you're kind of going on some kind of journey, it would appear. And the bus comes by and the light's just right, the sunshine, and you see the shadow of the bus against the ground, and you realize that there are all kinds of suitcases and bundles and boxes and all kinds of storage containers on top of this bus. And instantly you know that that's all of the issues that you worry about. Whether or not you're going to get that raise, whether or not your son's going to get into that college, whether or not you're going to get that date, everything that's gnawing at you, that you're thinking about and worrying about, is up there contained in these boxes. And people that you know are contained on this bus. What an incredible vehicle that you're riding on. People that you know are here together, and all of your worries are very securely attached to the top of the bus, and you look up and you wonder, who is driving this bus? And you look around and you see it's one of your guardian angels driving the bus, and about the time you realize it's a guardian angel, the bus pulls over to the curb and you know that it's your time to get off. So you stand up and you start toward the front of the bus to get off, and everybody says, we'll be fine. Don't worry about us. We're safe on this bus. We're going to go on this little ride, and don't you worry about all that stuff on top. In fact, you don't have to think about any of this. This guardian angel is going to take good care of us. So you step off the bus and kind of turn around, and the door closes, and the bus goes up and over the hill and disappears. So you are without concern. You're without worry. You're without having to think about people, places, and things. You are there totally by yourself, and you look around, and you're on the edge of a forest. So you go over, and you sit down on this big rock, and you seem totally secure. And then all of a sudden, inside your walk, sitting on this rock in your quiet place, you realize that you are falling. Oh my goodness, you're falling. You're something that's falling, 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 bump to the earth. You're not really concerned. You seem to be safe, and you've landed now on the warm earth, and you know that you have been an acorn that fell off of a mighty oak. And there you are, this tiny little acorn against this warm, moist earth. And the sunshine comes and shines on you. And all of a sudden you feel a stretch and you realize that you're putting down some roots. You're an acorn that's growing, that's progressing, that is in full, fast motion, like fast photography, that you're growing up taller and taller and taller into this magnificent oak tree. What a spectacular thing that's happened to you. You're a magnificent oak high above a lot of the other trees. And you're standing there, and the rain comes and washes your face, and it feels so good. And the birds come and build a nest and have a family. And a family of people come, and they have a picnic right there at the base of you. Oh, you feel magnificent being this great grown-up oak tree. You feel secure. And the seasons come and the snow comes on you and you feel warm and you give shelter to a lot of the animals. And then the springtime comes and you bloom again and bear other oaks. And it's an incredible life that you have, being a magnificent oak that grew from a tiny acorn. And you love this life. You love the breeze against your face. You love the sunshine against your face. You feel like all of your branches are just reaching up, touching God in the sky. This is the most magnificent life possible. And you feel so complete. And you stand there in all of your magnificence. And you say, this is good. This is good. And you do that day after day. This is good. This is good. But then one day, you hear them. you hear them coming, and it's the lumberjacks, and they're noisy, and they have machines that rip and tear and come crashing through the forest, and you have some uncertainty feelings, and you have a little bit of fear, and as they're getting closer and closer, you have a lot of anxiety, and then they finally come, and it's your turn, and they come, and they harvest you as this magnificent oak. But you thought your purpose was to stand there magnificent. You thought your purpose was to shelter the animals. You thought your purpose was to feel the wind and the rain against your face. And now you are a fallen oak. You're an oak tree. The lumberjacks have turned you into wood, into lumber. And now it's your time to pause. Your time to consider, what is your purpose? What are you to become? First a tiny acorn, then a mighty oak, and now lumber, sitting. What will you become? And now, nighttime has come to the forest, and you look up and there are millions of stars. Millions and millions and millions of stars. And there's a very special star. It's one we call the sun. And orbiting around that star, there's a very special planet, one that we call Earth. And on this wonderful Earth, there's a very special place. And it's called Florida. And it's called this room. And it's called in your chair. And very gently you've been able to come back and to be right where you are in this loving safety of here at this conference. So very, very slowly, I want you to take your arms up and give yourself a hug. And then very gently go ahead and don't do any effort. Just put them above your head. And then stretch one way and then the other way. And drop your arms back down. Move your right foot around just a little bit. And move your left foot. Put your legs back down and rotate your shoulders a little bit. If you're ready, you can open your eyes and If you've opened them too soon, just go ahead and close them again. Rotate your head around to the left. Then back around to the right. If you open your eyes, you'll find that you've been safe. You may have traveled, but you're here. I'd like to just talk a little bit about that meditation. A gentleman that had heard me tell about it wanted me to do it, and because it does have that scary place of the lumberjacks. I don't usually do it. But when I had done it, people would come out of it, and one woman said that she became a door to a lighthouse, and she couldn't understand that until she realized that she had taken on a new service commitment. And so that's what that had to do with that. There was a gentleman that said he became like 300 baseball bats, you know. I thought that was a good use. Another person, a woman, said that she became the rocker and the cradle in front of the fireplace of some kind of very old home, some kind of historic place. Seemed like a very loving thing between mother and child. Another man said he became the oak table in his grandmother's kitchen because that's where they shared meals and that's where they shared holidays and that's where they shared family stories, and it felt really good. This particular time for me, I very clearly became nothing but firewood, and a family was having a great time, hot dogs and storytelling, and it was seemed like it was maybe the end of my journey for right then, but it seemed like I was for a good purpose. That was kind of fun. But when I did this one time, there was an AA man who waited and waited off in the corner, and I could tell he was really bothered. And he waited till everybody else had left. And then he came up to me and he said, I need to talk to you. And he said, I was really loving that meditation. He said, I loved being an oak tree. He said, I was magnificent. He said, I was spectacular. He said, I love the seasons. He said, I felt the rain and the sunshine warmed me. He said, I was that magnificent oak. And then you had the lumberjacks come. And he said, I remember you said, just stay with it. But he said, I was so angry at you because the lumberjacks came and took me away and I became nothing but a big pile of sawdust. And he said, I used to be nothing, but I'm in recovery now and I'm not nothing. He said, and I was so mad at you, but I just kept sitting there and kept thinking about it. And he said, I could see nothing but this big pile of sawdust. And he said, I was so distraught. And then he said, two men in uniforms came in and they had pails and they had brooms and they kind of swept me up and they took me away. And he said, and they took me away to a paper mill and I became the pages of a big book. Yeah. It was a powerful, powerful experience. If anybody would like to share about this time or another experience? Go ahead. But you had something to say.
I was just going to say, or if you need to talk to her, and I'd be available too, one-on-one about the experience would be available later. Yes, ma'am, I saw a hand.
Somewhere in, I don't know where, she went off and then, you know, by herself for the group. But that's what I became. And place of peace and meditation.
And shelter, that's nice.
Hey, I'm Brenda Lee, recovering alcoholic, and I became a gazebo, a sandbox, a baseball bat. Farms and horses. I was just thinking of all the things that wood could be. It also reminded me, at one time I could have been the cross.
Very strong.
Mm-hmm. If you would, I'd like to close this session like we did the one before
and then,
lunch.
And then we'll stay and talk.
And we're going to stay here, yeah. But mm-hmm. people need to go and so on. So if you would remain seated, we're going to have a few moments of silence. We'll whisper the Lord's Prayer. Amen is the last word. And we'll have another moment of silence, and I'll let you know when that one's over. Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and glory, forever and ever. Amen.